Kids who spend longer in school commit less crime, but why? Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of conversations with the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. Lots of papers, quite a few of them written by today's guest, have established that increasing the amount of time that kids spend in compulsory education reduces the likelihood that they'll commit crimes. But we know less about exactly why this happens. A new CEPR discussion paper written by Brian Bell, Rui Costa and Stephen Machin from the Centre for Economic Performance at the London School of Economics examines the evidence for different explanations. So today I'm at the CEP to ask Steve Machin about what they discovered and what this might mean for education policy. Steve, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hi Tim.
It's important to stress that the sort of research you do establishes that education reduces crime. It's not just that criminals tend to drop out of school or don't turn up in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the good examples, I think, that we've got about empirical work in economics that tries to make sure that we can establish the direction of causality running from one variable to another. So if we look at Y and X, we wanted to say that X causes Y rather than Y causes X. So in this case, you might argue that the causation could go in both directions. So people who think they're going to be criminals while they're in school will probably be much less likely to invest in their education and therefore drop out early, maybe get no educational qualifications at all. On the other hand, we have from economic models that if you invest in more education, you're less likely to commit crime. And so establishing that the direction of causation runs from education to crime rather than from crime to education is a critical part of this research. The way in which we actually accomplish this in our empirical work is by looking at when the compulsory school leaving age changes. We've done this in a variety of settings. In the paper that we're talking about today, we look at when different states in the US change their compulsory school leaving age. I've been involved in work looking at when the change took place in England and Wales for children going to school in the 1972 to 73 school year, when the compulsory school leaving age was raised from 15 to 16. And so in that setting, we would ask the question of what happens if people who would have left at 15 are forced to stay on to 16? A, do they get more education? B, does that have any impact on crime? Although we might want to look at other outcomes as well. There's a well-established literature that actually looks at wages as well and shows that you can establish a causal impact of education on wages.
Yes, because Gary Becker at the University of Chicago, he famously suggested that this effect happens because school increases your future earnings, gives you more chance to get a job, so therefore crime becomes less attractive to you. Is that right?
That's right. And so it's basically an income effect. So for people who might be on the margins of crime, and you might think that economic incentives could tilt them either into crime or tilt them away from crime if they improve. This is the exact kind of idea. But if people get a bit more education, they're more likely to get higher earnings in the labour market, and therefore that may stop them from committing crime. It may tilt them in one kind of direction.
It's a funny way to think about it, isn't it? Crime as just one way to earn money rather than crime as a moral choice. So is there empirical evidence that he was onto something?
The assumption here is that this really applies to people on the margins. I guess the idea that hardened criminals are going to be affected by this is highly unlikely, and somebody who's never ever going to commit crime, it's highly unlikely to affect them. On the other hand, it seems to be a pretty good way of thinking about it for individuals perhaps on the margins of crime, if you think changes in economic incentives can alter people's behaviour.
Now, there's another explanation for why staying in school reduces crime, which is called the incapacitation effect. This sounds a little bit sinister. What's this?
The basic idea that underpins the Becker model is that the extra time spent in the classroom is productive. So people acquire more education, and then that has a positive impact on their earnings. It's also possible that actually just making children stay in the classroom doesn't necessarily improve their education. It's just actually keeping them in the classroom and off the streets, which is the incapacitation effect, which seems to matter. And so you could also see that there could be a crime-reducing effect resulting from that incapacitation.
So it's not necessarily good for the children, but it's good for the rest of society.
To the extent that, and we know this is true, to the extent that the social costs of crime are high, crime reduction resulting from the incapacitation effects, of course, has generates some social benefits to society.
So in this paper, you're looking at both of those effects together. What kind of data have you used to investigate this?
So we use data from two countries, both of which have changes in their compulsory school leaving laws during the time periods that we study. So the main analysis is based on the US in this paper, where we have information on arrests at county level. And so we look at 15 to 24-year-olds over time in counties. And of course, we can then look at what happens if the state changes its compulsory school leaving age. And so we'll have some states that do in some years and other states that don't. So we have a kind of treatment group and a control group. The way in which we actually tried to structure the question of the way it changes changes in the compulsory school leaving laws could influence both education and crime is by looking at the very well-known shape of a crime age profile. So you have a very clear inverse U-shape, where crime is lower at younger ages and lower at higher ages, and it reaches a maximum in the middle. And that maximum is, for most crimes, obviously not for things that adults do, like fraud, and obviously not for highly infrequent crimes like murder. But for regular property crimes, most property crimes, and for some violent crimes, the peak of the crime age profile is around about 18 or 19. This is a phenomenon that's seen in many settings in many countries in the world. So the way in which we structure our research design in this paper is to ask the question about, if you raise the compulsory school leaving age, that obviously has some scope to affect the shape of a crime age profile. Of course, one thing it could do is just move it up 1 year. So people would just delay when they first start doing crime by 1 year.
So what did you find out when you looked at this data? What did the inverse U look like?
What happens in practice is it seems to be a squeezing at the bottom end, reflecting an incapacitation effect while children are in school. But it also, crime gets reduced at older ages as well. So that actually seems to suggest that either there would be a productivity effect, a la Becker, operating subsequently, or there could be a dynamic incapacitation effect such that you get longer run effects from a short run incapacitation period of keeping children in school. It lowers the crime age profile because there's a crime reducing effect of education, but it lowers it by more for the younger ages, reflecting the short run incapacitation effect, but also a longer run effect as well.
Is this evidence in favour of the Becker interpretation then?
For the time period we study, actually not so much, because we don't find much in the way of actual productivity effects when we look at labour market outcomes, when we look at possible wage effects and possible employment effects. We find them actually quite small in the period that we study, which is between 1980 and 2015, where we look at all the changes in compulsory school leaving laws that take place there. But I think that's because if you look at the incidence of high school dropout in the US, which is the margin we're probably going to be most interested in, about whether people graduate high school or drop out, the lower end of the education distribution, the percentage of high school dropouts by the time we get to 2015 is pretty low. So we're kind of reaching a hardened set of low performers in school, I think. If you look at the previous work, which studied changes between 1960 and 1980 by Lance Lochner and Enrico Moretti, they actually found strong productivity effects underpinning the crime education results then. We find a shift here, and so we find less of the productivity effect. And rather than it seeming to be that, it seems like the short-run incapacitation effect has dynamic effects which persist into the future. And so there are actually long-run dynamic incapacitation effects that seem to be operating as well.
What could that be then? Because the whole point of an incapacitation effect is that they're in school, so how can you have a long-run one?
One good way of thinking about the shape of a crime age profile, which has been emphasised by criminologists, is different stages of criminal behaviour that vary by age. So you can kind of think about people starting to do crime, so crime onset, which takes place at a particular age. For example, the first time you might commit a crime might be at age 17. Then you may carry on doing more crime, and you might specialise, and so you do more, which then gets this higher frequency of crimes as people get a bit older. But then you get a period of desistance, which gives you a downward sloping part of crime age profile. So it's very interesting work in criminology that studies those three different phases and argues that different factors might be drivers of those three different phases. So onset age, when you first start doing crime, specialisation, when you start doing more crime, and then desistance, when you stop doing crime. So I think that framework is quite useful for thinking about the shifts in the crime age profile that we see. So another thing we look at in the paper is we have extremely rich data from Queensland, Australia, where we actually have individual level crime data matched up to individual level schooling records. So we can actually follow the same people then, rather than the cohorts of people that we follow in the US data, we can actually follow the same people through time. So we can actually see the plausibility or otherwise of those different periods of criminal behaviour and criminality that underpin the crime age profile. And so we seem to see the key factor is actually stopping people ever committing a crime. So actually either pushing up the onset age or having people not actually participating in crime at all. Hence, you can see how you can get a longer run dynamic incapacitation effect from that as well, because they actually don't go to a specialisation period and then don't need to desist either.
In developed economies now, most kids go through compulsory schooling for a very long time. As you were saying, there are very few dropouts from school now compared to 20, 30, 40 years ago. Can we take this policy much further? Is there much room for keeping children in school compulsorily?
Well, remember, this isn't a policy that was initiated at any point with the intention of reducing crime. Crime reduction actually comes about from these sorts of education policies as an unintended consequence. They were actually introduced to try and improve schooling and probably improve people's earnings and living standards and job quality and so on. That said, they do seem to have this unintended consequence. But it seems like the interpretation of the means by which that would be coming about which I think is intuitively very sensible. But if you think about going from a past when you might raise a compulsory school leaving age from 14 to 15, that is much earlier than raising it from 17 to 18 when people are on the margins of a labour market anyway. And so it seems like this tilt between the productivity effects from the earliest ages to the later ages probably changes the way in which the education policy may result in crime reduction. That said, one of the things we do in the paper is we carry out a cost-benefit calculation even in the period when there aren't any noticeable productivity effects resulting from increases in the school leaving age. And we still find there's a benefit-cost ratio over one. It's very close to one, actually just under one, if you only do the short-run incapacitation. But once you factor in the long-run effects of incapacitation, it goes well above one. Crime reduction still outweighs the costs from keeping the children in school.
More broadly, Steve, you've done a lot of work into the causes and consequences of crime. We tend to think of crime as a law and order issue. It's certainly presented that way in the media. Do you think that there is unexplored policy space to reduce crime through interventions, especially youth crime?
Yeah, of course, the law and order dimension of a policy, you know, are extremely important. But there are other policies that can impact on crime, a policy that may not necessarily be targeted at crime, but can bring about crime reductions as well. Mental health policy is a good example. And various other sorts of medical interventions might actually have positive spillovers in the sense of not necessarily being targeted at crime, but also may have some kind of positive consequences for crime reduction as well.
Steve Machin, thank you.
Thanks.
There's a Vox column about the paper called Why Education Reduces Crime, but if you want more detail than that, the discussion paper is extremely accessible. It's called Why Does Education Reduce Crime? And it's got detail of how the modelling was done to capture the effects, plus discussion of dynamic incapacitation that we were talking about. And of course, there's that evidence from Queensland, Australia that Steve mentioned. This has been your weekly Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Subscribe to us on your podcast platform or find us at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.